Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Mugwump Tower, this is Albatross 1-3, requesting permission to land. Over.
I don't need a computer to tell me how to land a damn airplane.
6.
Heads-up display, check.
5.
Lasers, check.
4.
Particle beam, check.
3.
Proton bolts, check.
2.
Chair control, check.
1.
Let's do it.
Broadcasting from a secret underground location somewhere in Mos Eisley, this is the Docking Bay 77 podcast. Make yourself comfortable. The show is about to start. Hello and welcome to the Docking Bay 77 podcast. I am your host, Dayton Johnson. Welcome to April. It's spring, and nothing says spring more than sports. Our next four episodes are all movies focused around sports. So, let me introduce the members of my West Ham United firm. He may be a family man now, but they used to call him the Major. Please welcome Scott Hoffman. How's it going, Scott?
Hey, always blowing bubbles. How are you, Dayton?
Good. I'm good. And he may be a journo and a yank, but I always fight by his side. It's my artist friend, John Wright. How's it going, John?
Oh, it's going great, man. How about you?
Good. Happy to be here. And I'd like to thank John for suggesting the movie we are going to discuss. Here you go. Matt Buckner and the Green Street Elite roar and whoop at the Pack Stadium, cheering their beloved West Ham United football squad. The match is rough and rabid, but only the warm-up for what comes next. When it does, don't run. Stand your ground. Fight. Just think of someone you hate. It's time to discuss Green Street Hooligans.
My name is Matt Buckner. Last spring, I got kicked out of Harvard. But what I was about to learn, no Ivy League school in the world could teach me.
Hey! Hey, this is my brother, Matt.
I'll give you 100 if you take Matt here to the match. And you're going to be on your best behavior.
Well, come on, then. We're sort of going into my place of business, right?
An outsider has discovered a place.
As like an organized political movement or something?
Where a game...
Not me. Green Street Elite.
...is only the beginning of another world.
It's really about reputation. You might learn something.
About soccer?
Not about soccer.
Come on, let's get out of here. Not when you're with us. You stand your ground and fight.
Fight? I don't have a fight.
Just fight for someone you hate.
Yeah.
You're running around with some kind of gang.
It's not a gang. They're my friends.
I like you, but you have no idea what you're getting into.
You know, Pete and his thug friends aren't the answer.
Hello, boys!
Sick! You're so sick!
I teach history. You teach? Yes. It isn't knowing that your friends have your back. It's knowing that you have your friends' back.
Green Street Hooligans.
So, as I mentioned, this was a suggestion by John. So, this is the first time viewing for me. Let's hit some opening thoughts on this movie. Since it was your suggestion, John, you get to go first.
This was a weird one for me when it was first introduced to me. A buddy of mine I used to work with, he was always into the indie type of films, and he recommended it. And growing up, I played soccer pretty much my entire life from like 5 years old up until high school. So I could relate to the, soccer, but you know, calling this a sports movie is kind of like, calling a Porsche a daily driver or something like that.
I know we took some liberties with saying it's
we did.
But I don't care.
We did. I mean, it was really, really interesting, and we're going to dive into it. I don't want to blow too much here in the first couple of seconds, but you know, getting into the quote unquote hooligan culture and never really, you know, growing up, you hear about it, you hear about these riots and stuff, but you never really hear what's behind it. And that was really, really interesting. Now, granted, you know, there's a lot of people online, other reviews I've read, that they've taken liberty with that and said it's, you know, not that way. And of course, they're going to defend themselves, be it that way or not. I understand that fully. But yeah, overall, I mean, it's a sleeper of a movie for me. It's at the time, the only really known actor, I think, in it was Elijah Wood. I mean, the only one that most people knew.
I mean, Claire Forlani, but she wasn't really a star.
Yeah, she's always been like, you know, bit parts. And I always find it interesting that, you know, they've got a cast full of English people except for Elijah Wood, and Claire's got to be his sister and speak in an American accent.
Right. Yes, that was humorous. All right. Very good. All right, Scott, opening thoughts.
This was an interesting one that I was happy to revisit because I haven't watched it in a long time. The last time I saw it is when it was out on DVD. This had to be a library find where we were just kind of scanning through and it looked interesting and there's Elijah Wood. This was before my kids got into soccer or football.
Yes.
Doesn't matter which one we say. Before they got into the football. So a lot of this was, you know, was unfamiliar territory for me. Like, I don't have a background in the sport other than, you know, my kids playing and all this other kind of stuff. But it was a fascinating movie. Like, you probably see matches in the US, but you have no idea what might be happening in other countries when they go to these matches. Now, when I go to like a, you know, Columbus Crew game or something like that, you definitely see people like very riled up and all sort of kind of stuff. I don't think it quite gets to this extent, at least in my little microcosm of it. But but it was fascinating, especially when you've got this movie coming, I'd say, fairly close on the heels of Lord of the Rings, Return of the King.
Right.
And a very welcome but different turn for Elijah Wood. I know this is right around the time when he did Sin City, which was also a very different Elijah Wood.
Yes, it was.
Very much
very so. Far from Back to the Future 3. I'll say that too. But but I thought it was a really engaging, interesting movie. So I was happy to revisit it.
Yeah. Yeah. So as I said, this is the first time viewing for me. And this is a very gritty, visceral movie. The fight sequences are brutal, to say the least. The story is interesting and eye-opening. I mean, like you said, you always hear about the riots, but typically they're kind of associated with South American football and Europe, you know, as well as some European. But yeah, I was never quite aware of firms, you know, like how they, you know, they're gangs, but not gangs, you know what I mean? So I thought that was interesting. I enjoyed it. I'm not gonna lie, I did enjoy it. I was entertained. I was engrossed pretty quickly. I do feel like they missed a huge opportunity to give the film some layers, and I'll get to that in my dislikes later. But in general, no, I was happy to have watched it, and I'm happy that I was able to find a copy of it to add to my collection. So I'm looking forward to discuss it. All right. If nothing else, we're going to move on.
That's the fact, Jack!
That's the fact, Jack!
It's time for That's the Fact, Jack. These are some facts about the movie and our director. Green Street Hooligans, a.k.a. Green Street, a.k.a. Hooligans, released September 9th, 2005 in the UK, directed by Alexei Alexander, written by Alexei Alexander, Dougie Brimson, and Josh Shelov, based on a story by Alexander, Brimson, and that's it. Starring Elijah Wood, Charlie Heumann, Claire Forlani, Mark Warren, Leo Gregory, and I have to mention Rafe Spall because...
Thank you.
Because of Shaun of the Dead.
Exactly. That dude does not age.
I know, right?
No.
Well,
no.
He's the
Lost Boys.
He was in later in a movie called What If with Daniel Radcliffe, looking a little more thin and fit, but barely a little bit older. But yes, you've got red on you. So, so I'm like, man, I know who that is. I know who that is.
It's your mom. Yeah.
Distributed by Universal in the UK and Freestyle releasing in the US. Runtime of 109 minutes. Two direct-to-video sequels exist, Stand Your Ground and Never Back Down. A couple of what-ifs I came across. Jake Gyllenhaal was was the first choice for the role of Matt that would go on to Elijah Wood. And Tom Hardy was considered for the part of Pete. That would be Charlie Hunnam. Charlie Hunnam wanted Tommy Flanagan to play his older brother Steve in the movie, even hanging out at Flanagan's favorite pub. They would later work together on The Sons of Anarchy. In fact, it was his performance in this film that got the attention of The Sons of Anarchy creator Kurt Sutter. West Ham gave the filmmakers access to the Upton Park ground, but once they found out what the movie was actually about, they distanced themselves from the project, which I find amusing. And yet I tagged them in my social media post. We'll see how that goes. All right. Now, Scott, you have some information on our director.
Yeah. I was very happy to see some fascinating info about Lexi Alexander. So at the top of the list, and it's not necessarily chronological, but fascinating to learn that as a teenager, Alexander was a member of Mannheim's City Boys, another soccer hooligan firm that was part of the inspiration for Green Street Hooligans. Lexi Alexander has had a fascinating career, a fascinating life, into the martial arts since she was 8 years old. In 94, at the age of 19, she became the World Kickboxing Association world champion in karate point fighting in Atlantic City.
Really?
Soon after, she retired from professional fighting in the same year and met Chuck Norris at a U.S. kickboxing event, where he encouraged her to come to Hollywood to act and study filmmaking. She was a stunt person, doing everything from fighting stunts to motorcycles, falling off of high buildings, you know, all the stuff that Lee Majors sings about. And apparently at one point, trained Marines in hand-to-hand combat.
The hell? Damn. Yeah.
The first film that Lexi directed was called... Johnny Flinton, I don't know if I'm saying that right, a short film that was nominated for an Academy Award in 2003, so a great way to come out swinging.
Right.
Green Street Hooligans was her first full-length directorial production, inspired by her experience watching her family's soccer team, Waldorf Mannheim, which led to a fascination with the sports and its fans. So then in turn wrote the screenplay with the writers you mentioned before. This was released in 2005 and was the second in the history of South by Southwest to win the Jury Award for Best Narrative Feature and the Audience Award for Best Narrative for Narrative Feature. There was a follow-up to this in terms of the, you know, pop culture stuff we know and love in 2008, where Lexi directed the film Punisher Warzone, starring Ray Stevenson as the Punisher, right. The first woman to direct a Marvel adaptation and her first studio film. At the time it wasn't received too well, but it's become a cult classic since then. She's also done a lot of advocacy, speaking out about gender parity in Hollywood, taking a stand for that and trying to get equal representation and discussion there. Directed several TV series episodes, including Arrow, Supergirl, Limitless, and Taken. Has done a lot of work to support the American Civil Liberties Union investigation into gender bias in hiring practices, specifically for women directors, trying to get a lot of headway with the Directors Guild of America. So very busy career, very fascinating career. And I was glad to learn that she's a director and a writer on this, because I know that I had heard people say, like, well, it's not exactly like what you see in the movie. And I'm sure there's some kind of Hollywood spin on some of it. But I think it's a good story to tell. Yeah. And I like the way that she did it.
Yeah. All right. Well done. Anything else about the movie that you guys found, any facts you wanted to throw out before we move on?
I think it was interesting what you mentioned about Charlie Hunnam being discovered in this to play in Sons of Anarchy, because right. I forgot he was in this. Like, it's a completely different look for him.
Between the
two. Like, it's interesting having watched Sons of Anarchy and then going to go back and, oh my God. All right. So,
He was younger and had a lot less hair in this. So, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Less leather. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Very good. All right. Let's move on.
That was totally wicked.
It's time for That Was Totally Wicked. These are things we love about the movie. John, what's something you love about this?
Something I love about this, and it's a little controversial to probably love this, but some of the fight scenes are, I mean, it's beautiful is not the right word to say, but
no, I think that's a good choice. Cause I was going to say the same thing.
You know, I'm the one in particular that I love is when, the firm is traveling, West Ham is traveling, and that's the other thing I find interesting is like a lot of these guys, you think, you know, hooligans. So you think all they do is sit around and watch football and drink beer. No, you know, Pete is a teacher, you know, another guy's a pilot,
right?
It's like, or, you know, and he happens to get into town before the guys are, they're on the train and he's like, you know, don't come here. They're waiting on, you know, and the rival firm's out there and they're taunting them. And he's like, yeah, we probably, you know, we're, you know, what they look at each other and we're fucked, you know, and like, you know, and Elijah Wood's clueless. I think that's the other thing I like about this is that he stays kind of clueless. You kind of slowly see him like become part of the gang.
Yeah.
So to speak, you know, Pete takes him under his wing pretty quickly, you know, despite not wanting to, you know, and then I forget the name of the character that, the guy that basically sells him out,
Bobber.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he sells him out. You know, he never trusts him, but you know, they have this thing where they're like, you know, we're going to go, we got to get off this train. We got to figure out how to get to the game. So they basically pay some guy delivering soft drinks or whatever, some money to drive them through, you know, and they stop them. I'm like, what's going on? We're here for the new Hugh Grant movie. We got to deal with it. Scared. You know, guys like, who's in it with him? I think Cameron Diaz. Oh, you know, she's totally doable. Let these guys go through, you know, and all the while they're still taunting them. And then they like, I love it. He's like, pull up over here. And then you got like 30 seconds, then get the fuck out of here.
Right. Yeah. That's a great sequence, but no, I agree. They are brutal, but they are shot and put together in ways that I would say beautiful works in a different kind of way.
You get a sense of the action, and unlike a lot of fight scenes that are prevalent now, it's got a nice mix between slow motion and really, really fast cuts. It's not always that fast, super speed up cut. You get a real sense about what's going on in the fight, and you also get a real sense of the danger in these fights. I mean, these guys, us Ham and the rivals, you know, it's life or death. It literally is, and you get a sense of that in that, and she conveys that so doggone well.
Yeah, agreed. That one scene where they're throwing bricks at him to start.
Oh yeah.
Man, what a way to start. All right, Scott, something you love about the movie?
Well, the scene that I had written down was actually that the van, you know, the movie. I love heist. That scene.
It's good. It's good.
So brilliant. And it's so fortunate that I'm assuming that the driver had to at least be a West Ham fan. Because otherwise, like, you don't know, like, driving a delivery truck, they could be coming from anywhere. But yeah, the fight choreography, when you think about like how many camera angles, how many shots they had to do and how careful they had to be, it's very well done. Yeah. And it never seems like, you know, it's interesting when it's like, you know, are they a gang or a firm? And Pete kind of takes exception to like gang, which is fair because they don't necessarily go around, you know, trashing places for the sake of trashing it. Right. They're not going around and causing trouble just to cause trouble or just picking on people or robbing people or whatever. It's all for the pride of their team. Yep. Right. Yeah. And even when they get into the fights, yeah, they're throwing bricks and all this other kind of stuff, but it's not for the sake of being lethal. Right. There's no guns. There's no knives. There's no, you know, you pick up whatever's around you, the boards, the bricks, whatever. And yeah, you're going to, you know, beat somebody up pretty badly, but when it gets lethal, you know, without spoiling anything for anybody, when there's one character that is killed in the middle of one of these things, the whole thing stops on both sides, right?
Yeah.
There's still that undercurrent, you know, respect for other human beings. There's one character that takes it a lot too far.
Yeah.
You know, it's always just kind of like, no, this is us just having a giant fight. Our fan club versus your fan club and getting into it. I thought it was kind of interesting that the one character that was coming out with a vengeance because of a lost son with all this, had not done anything since then to track down the people that he held responsible for it. Right.
Right.
It wasn't something where he's, because it doesn't seem like it's all that far. It's maybe a couple of train rides away.
Yeah. But you're also going into somebody else's territory. You're also would have to find him either at home or at work as opposed to in the pub. So, you know what I mean? There's a bit.
Right.
So that's, but I see your point, you know, but yeah.
Yeah. And I felt terrible for, Steve. Absolutely felt terrible. And I don't know how much to get into spoiler territory, but man.
Don't worry. I kind of touch on it a little bit later. Steve? Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, on so many levels. I just feel so bad for Steve.
Right.
I mean, but they also pointed out too, when Pete's taking him to the first match, you know, you see the guys, they're going into the arena or the field or whatever. And they all obscure, you know, throw their hoods up because, you know, he's like, you know, welcome to the most surveilled country in the world, and it's true. England has more cameras per capita than anyone else, and at least that we know of. But the interesting thing I saw, and I should have brought this up during trivia, is, you know, Pete's a history teacher.
Yes,
that's his that's his day job, you know, but he would have never made it as a history teacher because they do an extensive background check, and his time within the firm would have probably come up. You know, he's probably been arrested at least once or twice from the activities of this firm.
Yeah, but in this one, we never actually see them get arrested. So
no, you never do. I'm just saying, in the past, he more than likely would have not made the clearance to be a teacher. But I think that goes back to your point also. That's the other reason why these guys don't go looking for the major. You know, the police are going to be looking for them.
True. You know? Yeah. All right. So we touched on the fight sequences already, and the very first one where the phone box gets knocked over, and it opens the movie, and it's great. You know, there's a lot of quick camera movement, a lot of quick cuts, and you're right inside the fight. And then there's even some lens flare thrown in too to kind of blur the vision and obscure it and whatever. But it's so great, and it's such a great way to open the movie. Another thing I want to mention is Matt's story arc, Elijah Wood's character. Mm-hmm. So we open up, he's packing up his stuff in this dorm room while his, you know, roommate is on the phone talking about fantasy football and whatever. And then you're like, what the hell's going on? And he's just quiet, and he's kind of, you know, he doesn't do anything. He just leaves. Mm-hmm. You know, you find out he got expelled because they found, was it cocaine? Yeah, cocaine. In his room, in his stuff, and even though it was his roommate. And he's like, he doesn't really do anything. You know, he says he complained, but he doesn't really, you know, he barely tries to find his dad. He just leaves. I'm leaving, you know, whatever. He doesn't really do anything. He's kind of there. He shows up to see his sister and whatever. But by the end of this movie, he's transformed. He's learned to kind of stand up to his dad. He's learned it. He somewhat buried the hatchet with his dad too. You know, he's become a part of something, and he grew. And even at the end of the movie, he kind of, you know, gets back at the person that got him expelled. I love it. It's like, you know, this is my ticket back into Harvard, you know? So his growth, I really liked. And it's nice to have a main character that actually has a good story arc, and he does. And so that helped. There's more that they could have given us, and I'll get into that later, but overall, I do like his story arc, and I think that's, you know, and it's also, he's a likable guy. You want what's best for him. You want something good to happen to him. And they did a very good job telling that story. So,
along those lines, I have a question for both of you, just an opinion question. does he go back to Harvard and become a journalist? Or does he decide to not become a journalist because of what he's been through?
No, I think I think he becomes a journalist regardless.
Right. I'm going to say author. I don't see journalist. I see author. I think this is more of him writing his, you know, could have started out as a journalist, but I think he eventually ends up as an author because this seems like a bit of an, like a chapter in his autobiography.
True.
Right. I think he goes and does some, I don't know. I think he becomes a journalist that we need in the world, whether it's, you know, it would be interesting, but no, I see him eventually becoming an author too, but yeah. He's a little too young to have a good biography right now. So that's my thing, you know, but yeah, he could write about his dad, which I'm sure will make his dad mad, but whatever. No, right. I think he becomes a journalist.
Okay. Yeah. I don't see him going back to Harvard though. I think he's going to finish. If he finished school out, he finished it out somewhere else. Because I think he's to the point where, like, if you don't trust me, then I'm not going to waste my time on you. Because like you said, he grows a backbone.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But he did get the proof, which was funny.
Well, and that was more to take that guy down. I don't think that, I don't know. Maybe that's something they should have expanded on a little bit, is his grudge with Harvard a little bit, you know, because, for them not listening. But like you said, he doesn't. At the beginning, he doesn't put up much of a fight. He's very weak. He's very
He definitely grows a backbone, and I think he uses that information at the end for some nefarious purposes. That gets back into the cokehead or whatever. So
he says it's my ticket back into Harvard. So it's likely that he says, like, you know, all right, I've put in this much. I was just about to graduate, and this Van Houten or whatever his name, Van Holden. Maybe it should be Van Houten. He gets me kicked out and, you know, all because I'm afraid of his family and all this other kind of stuff. But no, now I get the 10 grand that he tried to use to buy me off. I use that to get to England.
Right.
I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And
I'm thinking he did too.
Take this guy down and finish his degree, but then, become the kind of journalist he wants to be, not the one that his dad wanted him to be.
Right.
It'd be interesting.
Now, fun fact that I didn't mention earlier, the guy that played Van Holden actually sings the song they played during the last fight.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. I believe they're trying to get, what was another song they tried to get, but they couldn't get their license for it. But so they had that guy write and sing a song for the movie. And I'm like, okay.
Of all the people.
Interesting.
I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah. Well, I read it. You know, I didn't catch the name either until I read it. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay, cool. All right. Anything else?
Just to touch again on, you know, Elijah Wood's character, you know, going back on what you said is, I don't think this, as a character, I don't think he ever had anybody in his corner other than his sister.
Who moved across the country.
And I would have liked to know her story, how she ended up in England, you know, because it's kind of random, but, you know.
Well, he makes that one comment that soon as mom died.
Yeah, she ran away. Yeah, that's right.
But
that's right.
But why England? I mean, but either way.
Right. But, you know, his dad was an absentee father, and that's probably his way of dealing with the loss of his wife or something, you know. And
right.
Like so many people, career in front of family and this, that, and the other. But, I mean, this firm, especially Pete, who is, they never mention it to the other members of the firm, but they're related by marriage. You know, they're essentially, brother-in-laws. And, you know, Pete's the only one from the get-go that sees something in him and decides he's going to stand up for this guy, you know. He gives him a tremendous amount of shit when they first meet. And, you know, he doesn't want to do anything with him. Constantly mocks him about baseball and, you know, and how much, you know, how much football, English football, is better than baseball. And
well, it is.
It is. But, you know, he sees his potential. He's the first person that sees his potential and actually, you know, is willing to spend time and gives a damn about this dude.
Right. Right. So and that's why he gets into the firm so quickly, is that he's looking for a connection he's not getting from his dad. He's not really getting it from his sister. So he finds this group of people that, after the first fight, they're all in on him. They're like, yeah, cool, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Right. Well, they're just excited because, you know, the Karate Kid was based on his his life.
Right.
Which means that Jeff Johnson hates him automatically.
We're not going to get the Daniel Russo. That ridiculous theory. God.
It all comes around. Crane kick's illegal?
Not that. I'm not
discussing. I don't know this particular
theory. I'm not discussing his fetish with Zapka. Restraining order. I was surprised he did a picture with him. Anyway.
So just remind me of the connections here. So Steve is Pete's brother.
Older brother, yes.
Yes.
Is Bover related to any of them?
No, he's just
they're not.
Member that he's a higher member within, or wants to be a higher member.
Isn't he the right-hand man? Wasn't he the right-hand man?
I don't know.
But I don't know.
I don't know if they ever said that. He wants a higher position within the firm. The firm is all the Bobber has.
Right.
You know? And what's interesting is that I saw something that was alluding to the idea that Bobber used to be a Millwall fan and then came over to West Ham. I don't know if that was ever official, but
yeah, I don't know. He was eating at a restaurant over there, which I thought was incredibly stupid.
Yeah. Bobber makes a lot of questionable choices.
Yeah. Bobber, I think Bobber is he's going to go with who he deems to be the most powerful, especially early on in the movie. Now you get a little bit of a character redemption of him towards the end.
Yeah.
It's a little too little too late in some aspects.
In every aspect almost.
Yeah, I would have changed the ending of the movie a little bit, and I don't want to give anything away, but Bobber to me would have been the one that paid the price, I think, at the end of the movie.
Yeah,
but the problem with that is we lose him, I don't think you care near as much.
Well, you still
kind of more of a head. He deserved it, you know what I mean? But I'm just saying.
Yeah, but you could. I mean, you still could have had them both.
Yeah, that's true.
Make the sacrifice.
That's true.
Because Bobber definitely has some. You know, he definitely has a man crush on Pete.
Yeah, because he was mad as hell that when Pete brought somebody new in, it was just like, you know, it's like, hey, who's this guy? All right. All right, let's go ahead and move on.
No, sir, I didn't like it.
It's time for No, Sir, I Didn't Like It. These are things that we don't like or don't work within the movie. John.
Oh, this is a silly one, but you kind of brought it to mind with the music. In the opening scene, it's like, how close can we get to Disturbed and not rip off Disturbed?
I know. I'm listening to it going, why does this sound familiar? And I'm trying to figure out who it was.
I was waiting for the wah, and it never came. that's a silly one. I think the thing I dislike about the movie the most is it's a very quick moving movie.
Yep.
And I think we as an audience deserve a little bit more backstory on some stuff and a little bit more, let's expand some stuff a little bit more. Let's expand for us across the pond that don't understand, you know, this rivalry between the firms. Let's expand on that a little bit. Let's expand on the hierarchy within the firms and the dynamic within the firms and this, that, and the other. It's all minor stuff. I do think some stuff definitely needs to be fleshed out more.
Okay. All right. I'm of the same mind, but in a different way. So we'll get there in a second. So, Scott, something that doesn't work for you.
Bobber's drunk singing. On the bench with the vodka. I know he's in distress and, you know, he's in a bad place mentally. And, but it was just weird. It was like the camera was in and out of focus and he's just there, like, you know, standing on the bench and like singing. And it was just like, it felt very uncomfortable. And I know that's probably the effect they're trying to go for there.
Right.
But it just, for me, it kind of took me out of it a little bit. Like, it's weird.
All right.
What about you?
So we don't get enough of Matt's family, you know, Shannon and Steve. So we briefly meet Shannon and Steve at the very beginning of the movie. You know, their paths cross a little bit here and there. Like the first day he comes back and he's beaten up. They're like, oh, I can't believe this, blah, blah, blah. And then he pretty much is like right out the door again. And, you know, we get that reveal of Steve being the major, you know, his stabbing, Shannon leaving him, and which is all terrible, you know. And like you said earlier, Scott, we do feel sorry for Steve at the end of the movie because he loses pretty much everything. But my problem is we really don't know anything about Steve. We really don't know anything about Shannon. And for those things to have a truly great impact, we needed more time with them. Most of the movie is spent with the firm, which granted does make a big impact on Matt's life. But the opportunity I think is missed in this movie is not only does it affect the people in the firms, but obviously the one guy, his son was killed during one of the fights. And that's what drives him to kill Steve, spoiler. And had we gotten more family time, you know, more him spending it with his, you know, with the baby and with his sister and whatever, when these things happen at the end of the movie, they're way more of a big deal. I mean, yeah, don't get me wrong. When Steve gets that bottle, you know, in the pub, you're like, oh shit, because it was unexpected. I didn't know that was going to go that far. But for us to really feel for Steve with, you know, when she leaves him and things like that, I kind of feel like we needed more of them. They're almost tertiary characters in a story that is supposed to have an impact on us. So that to me should have been as important as the fights and the time we spend with the firm. And that to me is a complaint. You put that in there and this is a way better film. So that's my biggest complaint.
Yeah, I think if they were going to do that, it feels like it would make sense to say, have them spend like one dinner together, right? So you could at least get some conversational cues as to, like, you know, his dedication to his family and, you know, the relationship and all this other kind of stuff. So you don't lose the pacing of
right.
him getting quickly, you know, it's like almost as soon as he lands,
right.
he's like, okay, yeah, great. You don't unpack your bag yet. Cause you're going to go watch a match. Like it was very quick. So it feels like it would have to be at least a smaller beat that kind of mm-hmm. gets that in there. And yeah, I agree. It seems like maybe that would have been more difficult to imagine Shannon leaving him, but her departure would have much more of an impact. And you can see why she leaves, because she's like,
absolutely.
I don't feel like my kid is safe. Like I am safe. Like this is clearly escalating a lot more than it ever should have. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that's, you know, even dinner here, dinner there, something, you know, have them just spend some time together. Cause they allude to Steve's temper early on, but they never come back to that. You know what I mean? It was, so there's a lot more going on there that we should have gotten. So that's my biggest complaint. Yeah. There was opportunities and
yeah, there could be a really good family dynamic and a really good family conflict that it's touched upon, but we need more of.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. It's also interesting, like how it feels like Shannon, I'd have to rewatch it now to see if how Shannon's reaction to Matt going to a match with the GSE, because if she knows Steve's background as the major,
right,
and a kid who really honestly didn't have any business being there and literally got stomped to death, her fear that her brother would be the same way. Like he's never been in a fight in his life. He has no business being there and he could be in the same situation. So I feel like that would scare the hell out of her.
Yeah. He pulls out two tickets to Chicago and she just forgets about everything.
Yeah. That was it. Right. You know, does anybody else have any other complaints they want to mention before we move on?
Nope.
All right. We're going to take a quick break and hear from our other podcast friends. When we get back, we're going to hit Smiling is my favorite and give this movie a rating.
What was that laugh? I ask myself. I'm trying to recreate that as much as possible. I don't think I've ever laughed like that in my life. That was new. What is that? This is my new laugh for 2024.
New year, new laugh.
We have a spanking new podcast for your ear holes called Doom Generation.
Available on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
Later, Doomers.
Okay, Jason, test of our friendship. Which is better, Van Halen or Van Hagar?
Man, honestly, I think Van Hagar has better music.
Oh, no. It's Van Halen. You're wrong.
What about Michael Jackson's Bad album versus Michael Jackson's Thriller album?
Thriller, obviously. Bestseller ever.
No. See, people trick themselves into believing that it's actually bad.
Okay, Trading Places versus Coming to America.
Trading Places is the funnier movie out of this deal.
No, Coming to America is the funniest movie of all time. So if you find yourself backing one of us or the other of us, you need to be listening to the Shirley You Can't Be Serious podcast.
That's right. We have a friendly discussion. Dee and I are best buddies, and we take a deep dive and look at the behind-the-scenes stuff, the history, and the fun facts of all these wonderful movies and music from our youth.
It's really just an opportunity for us to geek out about the things that we really loved growing up.
For example, do you know the actor that was in Star Wars, Batman 89, and Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Yeah, sure. It's Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford wasn't in Batman.
Oh, yeah. Billy Dee Williams.
Billy Dee Williams was not in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Who was it?
Well, you've got to tune in to the Shirley You Can't Be Serious podcast when we discuss Raiders of the Lost Ark versus Back to the Future to find out the answer.
On the Vintage Video Podcast, we'll be reviewing every single wide release of the 1980s in chronological order. Over 250 episodes to enjoy and thousands more to come.
John enters the store now to order another can of ether. I picture him outside like Homer with the gasohol.
One for you, one for me.
I also like to think about that the kids renew their vow not to talk about the murder.
By murdering someone.
They're taking a blood oath with someone else's blood.
This stuff is 7 times more powerful than uranium. And they open up the vault that it's contained in, not wearing any kind of protective gear. Yeah.
And it's wooden crates.
Wooden crates. It's like the guys in Chernobyl picking up the graphite rocks and going, nah, because there's rocks.
Hugging the elephant foot. Just like, oh, this thing's smooth.
It's so warm.
He turns to dial the number from the classified ad without even thinking about the numbers. We know this because we can hear his thoughts, and he's talking about how AJ was right that ninjas are misdirecting him.
They're misdirecting.
I really wish that he'd turn to the phone and been like, 6-6. That's two. Vintage Video. We're rewatching the 80s so you don't have to.
Why are you smiling like that?
I just like to smile. Smiling's my favorite.
Make work your favorite. That's your favorite, okay?
Okay.
Work is your new favorite.
Fine.
All right, it's time for Smiling's My Favorite. These are some favorite things about the movie and some other random stuff. So, first of all, favorite character, John.
Oh man, this is tough, but I actually, my favorite character is Pete.
Okay.
I think Pete, you know, as much as this is a Matt centric story, I almost feel like Pete's the more interesting character. I think Pete's,
he's way more interesting. No doubt
Pete's
about that.
Pete's got a better story. I mean, and you get a more rounded picture of Pete because, like I said earlier, he's, when you're first introduced to him, you just think he's a guy that likes to fight and drink and watch football.
Right.
You know, you come to find out that he's a history teacher. He's got a wicked sense of humor. He's got a very, very great sense of humor. He's a very compassionate man. Like I said, he gives up his seat to a lady on the bus.
Yep.
You know, the kids in his class obviously love the dude, you know, when he has them out playing football and Elijah Wood playing goal and stuff. And, you know, the kids really look up to him. You see a guy that is multifaceted.
Man.
And again, you know, that kind of alludes back to the fact we don't get enough time with some of these characters.
Right.
We only get one side of their story. But I really, he is my favorite character.
All right. All right, Scott.
You already mentioned it, but I'll say it again. Swill, Rafe Spall.
Really?
He's the one that, to me, you know, there's the culture of the, you know, you got to stand up for your reputation. You got to, you know, go out and kick butt and all this other kind of stuff. Swill seems like he just wants to be in it with his friends. He's just there for a pint, right?
Right.
But it was that for, it's kind of like watching this out of sequence now that I'm such a fan of Edgar Wright, especially Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. So as soon as Elijah Wood walks in
and sees him, and he's like, "Hello, mate." And he was like, "Oh my god!" So that, he just automatically got love for that. What about you?
Actually, Matt, Elijah Wood's character, I like. You know, as I mentioned before, I like his story arc. He does a good job showing us all the emotions he's going through, and he's believable in this role. You know, the kind of spineless. You know, I'm still dealing with my mom's death, and my dad doesn't care, and whatever, and then he becomes more than that by the end of the movie. So I really liked Matt. I could kind of relate to him a little bit, although I'm not planning on jumping into a, you know, a firm and getting the crap kicked out of me. I'm too old for that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I still like his character a lot. So he's my pick. All right. Favorite scene, John.
I touched on it earlier, but the scene with the truck when they get all out. Right. My favorite part, though, is, you know, these guys are outnumbered at least.
I'd say at least 2-1.
Two, if not 3-1. And at the end, you know, they're the ones talking shit because they're at the corner, you know, they're.
Well, the cops show up and arrest the rest of them.
Right. They arrest the rest of them. And like, you know, like, they're down there like, here's your mighty. Here's your mighty. Here, you know, here's your mighty. You know, you. And they, you know, they're going down the steps and it's slow motion and they're bloodied. And it's like we said, the fights are brutal in this, but they're not gratuitous. They are not gratuitous.
Right.
But you know, you get the sense of the family that these guys have for one another. I mean, even Bauer, you know, to a certain degree, I think accepts Matt in those moments because he's seen that Matt won't back down and Matt has their back. He still doesn't trust him, and doesn't like him, but in those moments, he's glad to have him a part of the gang.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Cause I don't see them getting in without his idea.
No, that wouldn't happen.
No, not at all. All right, Scott.
Mine's a dad joke moment. Matt getting schooled by Pete's students.
Yes, that's a great scene.
That was awesome. Yeah, and I can relate because I've been in these things where it's like parents versus the, you know, versus the kids. And you get out there and man, these kids are running circles around you.
You set me up. Those are like junior Olympians or something. Nope, just normal kids.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. They're doing all day. And it's just like, so that whole sequence where he's like, oh, you're a history teacher. You're a teacher and going to meet his students. And it seems like, oh, you're going to, you know, sit in the classroom. No, you're going to go out on the pitch. You're going to see him, you know, and his kids. And I think it was just a great sequence.
Oh yeah.
Dayton, what about you?
So this was kind of a coin flip because it's down since you mentioned the, him getting schooled, I'm going with the opening fight scene. It was such an attention grabber. It sets the tone really for the rest of the movie because it has that pace. It has that gritty feel. And like I said, I was just kind of like, okay, we're off and running. So I really love how that was put together. And I was really much impressed. And the rest of the fight scenes are on par with that one. So it was definitely, it was a great way to open the movie and give us what we are. This is what you're going to get. So if you don't like this, you might as well turn the movie off. So, I like that. I can appreciate that. So yeah. The fight scene, opening fight scene. All right. So favorite sport to watch, John, I know your answer.
Yeah, you probably do, but I'm a hockey guy, tried and true.
All right. Very good. Scott.
It's gotta be just one, right? Can't do a Hoffman answer. Well, multiple. Now,
see, there's one of those things that there's certain sports I prefer to watch in person.
Yes.
And then there's sports I'll watch either way. So, yeah. You know, I mean, like for instance, I can only watch baseball in person. On TV, it's like watching flies fuck. You know, it really is just, just can't.
Not bad. They've sped it up a little bit.
It doesn't.
The flies?
Well, I mean, you know, depends on, you know.
That Geo.
Flies are only around for a couple of weeks, you know. You
can't, man.
I mean, you got to do what you got to do. Yeah. For me, it's going to be U.S. soccer, though. And that's all because, you know, when my middle son started playing as a keeper, you're on the edge of your seat. And then, you know, he becomes a tremendous fan. We go to Columbus Crew games as much as we can. And that became much more exciting once you know a little bit more about the game. And now my youngest playing it, that's still my favorite. I mean, technically it's anything that I'm watching my kids play,
right? But
for me, it's still soccer. What about you, Dayton?
So I've spent most of my life being a San Francisco 49ers fan. So American football is always going to be my first choice. Now, recently, now that it's more widespread, more available, it's easy for me to watch real football. In fact, like I said, I'm wearing my SC Cincinnati shirt, and I am going to a game, a match in a couple months. So I get as excited watching one of those as watching the 49ers play. Yep. So it's getting really close. And, you know, for me, those are my two top. I can watch hockey and basketball to a lesser extent, depending on my mood. But yeah, those are my top two for sure. But yeah, or fortunately, however you want to look at it, I'm always going to be an American football fan first, you know, and then real football second. So, all right. Now, this was an impossible question, and I just yesterday or so messaged the group and said, let's open this up to a few more choices. So, favorite sports film. So, I have five that I'm just going to rattle off real quick. So, Scott, why don't you go first this time?
See, I was going to ask you the number.
I just put the first five that popped into my head, and those were just boom, 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 boom. So, that's how I did mine.
Okay. Top five. Creed.
All right, very good.
It's a big one for me, which unlocks a lot of other Rocky films. But The Sandlot,
yeah,
League of Their Own. Good.
Great choice. Yep.
Coach Carter.
All right, very good.
And most recently, and I don't know if this is going to split the group, but I thoroughly enjoyed Ford versus Ferrari.
I haven't seen it yet. I really want to watch it.
Either, so.
Yeah, I heard a good thing. So
my youngest is into racing a little bit more lately, and we had a great time watching that. So
awesome.
John, what about you?
Oh, man, I didn't make a list, so this is going to be off just off the top of my head.
Shooting from the hip.
Yep, shooting from the hip. Miracle,
because
I am an ice hockey guy.
We are talking about that next week.
Yep, Slapshot.
Yeah, okay, good one, yep. Yeah.
From there, I would probably go to, geez, it's tough. Remember the Titans.
Oh, mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really like Remember the Titans. And I'm going to get some shit for this one, but I was a BMX kid growing up. So rad.
Oh, I got to see that one.
It is a horrible movie, but I love it. It is just, it's, you know, I love it for the writing scenes. You know, that's what I wanted to do for the longest time.
Right.
And, you know, and an honorable mention, because it's not a movie, is I love Shoresy. I love the show Shore Z on Hulu right now.
Yeah, I haven't watched it.
Oh, it's great. It's hockey centric. It's funny. It's irreverent. It's great.
Cool. All right. So I have League of Their Own, The Natural, which I love The Natural. I think it's a great movie. Miracle, after watching it again recently for our upcoming episode, I was just like, God damn, this movie's good. And Hoosiers, because it's just a great movie and a great basketball movie. And then Tin Cup, which we're also talking about later this month. So, yeah, those are all, like, if I want to do a film, like a sports movie film festival, those are on there. Now, Sandlot's pretty close, because I watch that every 4th of July, because you have to. It's like a law somewhere. And, but yeah, those are my ones. And I don't have any football ones on my list, because for whatever reason, none of them really come to mind first. I don't know why. They just don't. Those are the ones I like to watch all the time. All right, time for some final thoughts and a rating. 1 to 5 film reels. John, how do you want to sum this up, and what's your rating?
I want to sum this up, you know, basically what I said. I think overall it's a good story. There is still some stuff that needs to be fleshed out. The odd thing that occurred to me the other day, because I watched this 2 times in a row the other day, and when they're singing the West Ham song, one of the things that, you know, I've been blowing bubbles, one of the things that popped into my head, I don't know if you've ever seen Euro Trip.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
One time.
Yeah. Yeah,
where they wander in to the Manchester United bar and have to sing, you know, the Manchester United song, and they end up singing Morning Train.
Yeah.
For some reason that popped into my head.
Yeah.
I love
the scene,
it.
In a scene where, you know, Pete is teaching Matt the slang, that also triggered a Euro Trip moment where the kid's like, you know, you guys are on a whole other level of swearing around here.
Yep. Here's your safe word.
Yeah. But, you know, I really like it, because it's, again, it's, it's a culture within a culture that I don't know a ton about.
Right.
You know, I'm looking into like finding some books on this and maybe reading it because I want to know how this all started and what, you know, is it still going on like this and whatnot. But, you know, overall, I really, really enjoyed this movie. It's been a long time. Like Scott said, it's been, God, it's probably been 10 years or better since I saw it. And does it hold up as well as I hoped it would? No, but it does hold up surprisingly well. I think the biggest detriment to it is it's just, you know, in the age of 4K and Blu-ray, it's not the sharpest picture to watch, but capturing that little image in time, it almost works for it in that aspect. But
yeah,
I want to give it a solid 3.5.
All right. All right. Very good. Scott?
Yeah, it's interesting, like, because I'm also kind of debating the rating as I'm about to give it. I feel like it's a 3 that has become a 4.
All right.
So okay. I'm glad that I rewatched it. I'm glad that I had to buy it to rewatch it, because it is one that I would recommend to others who haven't seen it. Now that I know the background of the writer-director, Lexi Alexander, it feels like it has a little bit more meaning, given that it's apparently very difficult to find.
Yeah.
It's one worth seeking out. So yeah, I'll stand at a 4. Dane, what about you?
So the fight scenes, the bond these guys have, Matt's story arc are all very positive things about this movie. But for me, like I said before, it misses the true impact without us getting to know Steve and Shannon. So those sequence of events at the movie aren't as impactful as they should be. So it is definitely worth a viewing, and I do recommend people to see it. And so I'm going with a 3 out of 5. So it's you fix the things with the family and it's easily a 4, but it's worth seeing, you know. And I'm glad that John suggested it, and I'm glad, Scott, that you can join us, because most people that I was suggested it to were like, I don't know about that.
No. Yeah, I had also heard that a little bit, but no, so I think it's worth it.
We're the brave ones, I guess, that were willing to watch this. There you go. So that was
great. Yeah, it's very much a sleeper of a movie. It's not something you're not going to come across it. And, you know, if you're flipping through the channels and it's on, happens to be on something, I don't know that you're necessarily going to stop and watch it. This is a very much a deliberate watch.
Yes, I agree with that. Yeah, because honestly, if you miss the beginning, you're kind of like, why is he getting his ass kicked? Like, what does he care about this? I don't know. But yeah, no, it's worth checking out. So, and as we've said a couple times, good luck finding it, because it's not really all that easy to find right now. So anyway, good conversation. And thanks again to John for suggesting this. So let's take a minute. Scott, why don't you tell us what's going on over at A Film Buy?
Yeah, so we are full speed with phasers set to stun. There's a lot of ground to cover. There's a lot of series to talk about, a lot of installments, and we're having a great time doing it. I'm remembering a bunch of stuff that I forgot how much I loved it. And when you're able to talk with others about that, it just takes on a whole nother meaning. Dave and I are also pretty thoroughly into a film at 45.
Right.
We're into 1979, dusting off some more hard to find classics. So I thank the local libraries for making those things accessible since they're all 45 years old. And then there's always, you know, the flagship podcast and several entries for 1996. So there's a lot of exciting stuff to listen to.
Yeah. You guys are very busy over there. I enjoyed for 79. I enjoyed Norma Rae. That was a good episode.
And Amber was brilliant.
And of course, Rock and Roll High School, you know.
Yeah.
I still maintain the soundtrack is the best part of that movie.
I'm not saying
the movie is terrible. I'm just saying that's the best part of the movie.
That is fair. Yeah.
It's Ramones. How can it not be?
I know, but I'm just saying.
Just you wait.
All right. John, where can people find you and your art?
Anytime you can find me on Facebook at the Art of or JW Art Studios, the Art of John Wright. And physically, at least for April, it looks like at the end of the month on the 27th, I will be at Cincinnati Pop Expo. which is a pop culture expo. Going forward from there, I've got upcoming appearances. I know I will be at Gem City. I know I will be at Free Comic Book Day at Bell Book and Comic in Dayton. I will be at Cincinnati Comic Expo. I will be at the first ever Middletown Comic Expo. I will be, I'm going to try to pop up a lot of places, and I'm currently got all my notes done for my characters for my book I talked about. It's going a little slower than I like. Probably not going to get it out this year. I'm going to try. So I'm hoping to, be able to announce a Kickstarter on that in the next 3 or 4 months, God willing. So,
I can't wait for that.
Yeah, I'm excited for it too. Name a character after me and have him get killed in the first couple pages.
Well, I haven't worked a lot of friends and families into it. And Scott, I don't know if you know, it's not the book I told you about at last Cincinnati. I've simplified things a little bit. That one's still
in the works.
This one, the premise is Santa Claus Vampire Slayer, inspired very much by the Scooby-Doo mashups I've been doing and the, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter book. Right.
So now we know what he's doing when he's not delivering presents.
I know that, I have had a request that a character based on Cindy Lou Who dies a horrible death. So I'm working on that right now.
That got dark in a hurry.
Oh, it's going to be dark. It's going to be dark. It's going to be dark and campy and gory and violent. And it will probably get me disowned from my in-laws when it's all said and done.
So that's the goal. Gotcha. All right.
Yeah.
I'm just hoping there's a cameo by Lee Majors from Scrooged.
Oh, I actually have that shirt. Nice. Reindeer died.
Nice.
Oh, well done. Love it. Love it. All right. But as always, guys, thank you, Scott.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Thank you. We'll see you in a couple weeks for the next one.
Yes. And as always, thank the listeners for stopping by, spending some time with us. Let us know what you think. Have you checked out Green Street Hooligans? And let us know what you think. What's your favorite sports movies? And, what's your favorite sport to watch? Let us know. We are on Facebook and Twitter. All of our social media information is in the show notes. We also have a Discord. Join that. Chat with us about whatever you're watching, reading, even video games you might be playing, as well as make upcoming episode suggestions. If you are so inclined, we do have a Patreon. For as little as $1 a month, you can have access to all the exclusive content, as well as early access to episodes and some behind-the-scenes videos of episodes as well. If you're unable to join our Patreon, share us with your family and friends and rate and review on your podcast app of choice. If we see the review, we will read it on an episode and share it on social media. Upcoming episode, as I mentioned earlier, next week, we are discussing 2004 film about the 1980 U.S. hockey team and the Miracle on Ice. Special guest Michael Burgett of the Screen Nerds podcast will be joining us. We are talking about Miracle, starring Kurt Russell. Do yourself a favor and watch more movies. And remember, physical media is better than streaming. The Docking Bay 77 podcast is produced and edited by Dayton Johnson, recorded with Rode Pod Mics, the Zoom PodTrack P4, and edited on Audacity. Opening music provided by Eric Jason Brock. You can find him on YouTube and Bandcamp. Thank you for listening.